listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. I have been waiting for this show for weeks. Today, we are joined by Governor Tony Evers and Nicole Goble from the national organization Caregivers Action Network. Joining us first is Governor Tony Evers. Governor, thank you so much for being with us today. Kristen and I started the show because we're both family caregivers to young adults with autism and intellectual disabilities. I'll let Kristen tell her story, but for me, I was a caregiver for my son, which had been one of the most, or is, I should say, one of the most special relationships that I think I've had with another human being, and one of the most gratifying, to be honest. But there definitely has been some areas in my life which being a caregiver has taken its toll. For me, one is the impact that it's had on my overall mental health. There has been some periods, my son is now going soon to be 20, but there's been some periods that I did go through some pretty severe depression and anxiety while caring for him. And then there is also the fact that because I spent most of my days caring for my son, I wasn't working, which resulted in me not paying into Social Security or my other retirement plans. So it leaves some financial uncertainty for our future, at least going forward. How about you, Nicole?
Right.
Or Kristen?
Right. And Governor, we know you've been listening to stories of family caregivers all over the state for quite a while. And I actually participated in one of your listening sessions when you were getting the budget proposal organized. And I was really struck by how responsive you were and your staff was and how many people really had common situations to me. My daughter, Nicole, is 21, and she has autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. And as Liza said, the relationship is really special. I know the universe gave her to me because I needed to learn patience desperately, and she has been testing me on that every day since she's been here. And I also struggled with some physical and mental health challenges that had to take a backseat to her. And then from a professional standpoint, I have been privileged to be one of the MMSD, Madison School District public school teachers since 2000, but I've had to retire early because there's no one to work for Nicole. And so I have to be that family caregiver. I have to fill that gap. And so, you know, we are both so grateful for all the things that you've put into your budget proposal to support family caregivers. It's clear you've been listening to people like us. We believe that you are really a champion on this issue. So my first question for you is why? Why do you feel it's so important to support family caregivers?
Well, there's two good examples.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, and you know, everybody deserves to receive quality, compassionate care, especially when folks are at some really vulnerable points of their life. So that's what we want for our parents, our grandparents, kids, you know, whatever. If they need that kind of support, and that's what we would want for ourselves. So I know that that you know as well as I do that we're facing a caregiver of crisis in our state, and I think it's really evident. As you know, I've traveled around the state talking to caregivers or doing events like this, and our state population is going to be different than it has been in the past. Our population of folks 65 and older, which includes yours truly, expected to grow by 72% between 2050 and 2040. That's six times higher than the overall Wisconsin population growth of 12% during that same period. So, you know, as a result of that, the demand for long-term care services obviously are going to increase, but also the not only the demand, but that is why, you know, the demand exists now. It's gonna obviously increase. So we have to invest in a strong, stable, long-term care system, and most of all, why we have to invest in the workforce that makes that care possible, including family caregivers. At the end of the day, we're always going to need caregiving, so supporting the needs of caregivers is critical for our present and our future needs as a state. And it, you know, it, supporting is yes, but you know, I heard you talk about you know, within the two of you talking about your stories. It's not just a financial thing. We also need to make sure that access to behavioral mental health for caregivers is an important part of our way that we provide help for caregivers and obviously the people that are in their care.
Yes. You know, 80% of all people needing care are given that care by unpaid family caregivers. And we see the results of that with Kristen's story, right? The school district lost an excellent teacher because there was no one to care for her daughter. So she had to step aside and do that. So my question for you are, what are your thoughts on how we can best combat the paid caregiver or direct care provider crisis?
Yeah, well, we have to pay them more pay them more if they are in a situation that they're paid. So I've been proud to have had two budgets where in one biennium we had $230 million to support workers who provide direct care to Wisconsinites and over $180 million to increase that direct and personal care rates, including for family caregivers. And obviously the pandemic has made all of this even more complex. And so we were fortunate, frankly, that the federal government stepped up and we were able to make some decisions around that. So we directed over $200 million of our federal pandemic relief funds to those who were caring for our most vulnerable residents. And during such a tough time, including our nursing homes, long-term care providers, and home and community-based service providers. And we also increased by 5% rate increase for home and community-based services using ARPA funds to provide another boost. But now, you know, we have a $7 billion surplus in the state, and we're trying our darndest to convince the legislature to use some of that money to really take this to the next level. My budget proposes $88 million to increase direct care rates for family care, $88 million for personal care rates, and $150 million to make sure that we are in a position to really do the right thing for these folks that need that help. And so I believe we're headed in the right direction, but I can tell you that it's going to take some effort on the parts of the people of Wisconsin. And frankly, I'm hopeful that the people that you share this conversation with, both myself and the next person, to make sure that people get to the legislators and get to the legislators across the state of Wisconsin, not just your hometown people, but we need to have the Joint Finance Committee in particular to understand how important caregiving is and how it's really important that we provide the resources that they deserve.
Yes, thanks, Governor. Our family actually did benefit from your designation of some of those federal funds to increase some of the pay for the people that were supporting Nicole and for us when we were able to support Nicole. So thank you for that part. It's clear that you understand that money is part of what needs to be done here. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the Joint Finance Committee, and we've had quite a few legislators on to talk about this with us and to help us educate people about how to get to them and how to keep telling the stories. But I think you're probably going to have a little bit more of a unique insight that hopefully you can share with us on what is the problem from the Republican side in seeing how this is a bipartisan issue, right? It's a crisis that's impacting everyone. And so do you have something more that we can do than just keep talking to our legislators? Is there a distinct message? Is there an argument to give back to the Republicans or to hear from them on how to make some changes?
Yeah, and that is, I mean, there's a lot of people in the legislature that never have either needed to personally provide care or, have had loved ones in a nursing home or, you know, in that situation. And so it is there's not a good way to do it other than to say this is, especially using personal stories, I think it's important, and having them understand that that, you know, taking care of a family member just doesn't happen. I mean, people just don't show up at your door and say, I want to help. A lot of times it's on your own, and to making sure that people get it, that that it isn't a, you know, they I don't think, that's, I'm trying to put it in the context. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's not whether I'm a Democrat or they're a Republican. It's a priority. Everybody should know, and, you know, with the aging population, I can't believe there isn't a legislature who knows of someone in their lives that needs care of a caregiver. And many of them may have that situation at home, but I don't think so. The way that they have responded, they kind of responded the same way last time, but they ended up putting money in the budget. So I do believe that it is a bipartisan effort. It's just that they have other things to worry about, like elections. But at the end of the day, this is about elections, and we want to be on the right side of things, because this is an important topic, and people need help. And if it doesn't come from the state government, I'm not sure where it's going to come from. We have the ability to do it. I mean, it's not like we have to go out and borrow money to make this happen.
Well, and I love something that we spoke with our representative, Alex Jours, the other day, and he had said, I love how he put it, that you had set the bar really high taking care of us and what you had put in the budget for caregiver requests. So it's going to be hard for those that are opposed to it to not come close, right, to not put mm-hmm. something in there. But one thing that I think is on everybody's mind, whether they're a caregiver or not, is the economy. Right. And so I try to look at this from the big picture. What happens if these are, if these asks are not funded? Well, like we've said, you know, kind of over and over with Kristen's situation, you have a veteran master degree teacher that has now had to leave, you know, out of no other choice to take care of her child. But what are some of the other ripple effects that you can foresee coming if we don't address this crisis?
Well, that's just it, and I think this is a realistic argument. We care about, everybody cares about our economy, but if people are taken out of the economy to take care of a loved one in particular, that's one less person. That's one less person that's providing them. You know, we have the largest number of people working in the state of Wisconsin's history right now. As we, if we don't support situations like this, caregiver, personal caregiving, we don't support that. If we don't support child care, it's another care.
Yep.
Correct. And we will have people leaving the workforce in droves, and that does not help our economy. That is going to make it more and more difficult for us to continue the good economy that we have in the state of Wisconsin. So if it's just about dollars and cents, taking people out of the economy and putting them in a situation where we have fewer and fewer available people to be in our workforce, that's a problem for us as a state.
Right. And we have to acknowledge that these people are the backbone of our state, right? So if the right. caregivers can't take care of themselves or don't have the resources to take care of themselves, you know, if I fall ill or whatnot, then where yeah. does my son go? And a lot of times that involves, you know, seniors, not senior centers, but, you know, more institutions
that end up costing taxpayers yeah. so much more than they realize.
Right. So taking care of me is a fraction of the cost, opposing to having to send my son somewhere on the taxpayer's dime.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, perfect.
Yep. Governor Evers, we have about just one more minute here. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to just share a final thought on a message you'd like to share with family caregivers, as our audience will be definitely listening to you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity. Obviously, this is an important part of my budget. If I hadn't you know, I have a bit of a caregiving background myself. I spent, well, first of all, my father was a physician, and he took care of tuberculosis patients at a health facility in Sheboygan County. Nice. And I was born, we lived on site. So I had the opportunity to work with people that needed care from a real young age. And then at one point in time in my career, I was, when I was in Madison, I worked as a nurse's aide at a nursing home.
Well, Governor Evers, you get it, right? Yes. I mean, that's so clear. So thank you for that. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Never enough time.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Governor.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand. We just had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Governor Tony Evers about issues impacting family caregivers. If you missed the interview, you can listen to the replay on our podcast, which can be found on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, civicmedia.us, and of course on our own website, empoweredcaregivercommunity.com.
Next, we are going to be talking with Nicole Goebel, Director of Community Initiatives at the Caregiver Action Network, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C. Caregiver Action Network, or CAN, is the nation's leading family caregiver organization working to improve the quality of life for more than 90 million Americans who care for loved ones.
Hello, Nicole. Can you first tell us about the primary work that CAN does, and then what is your role with CAN?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you kind of stole my thunder. Like, we serve the 90 million family caregivers in the U.S. And that may seem like such a preposterous number, because we see different numbers kind of all over in different reports. But this reflects caregiving across an entire lifespan. So everyone from caring from that aging loved one, you know, dealing with Alzheimer's or other impacts of aging, you know, kind of a more stereotypical, I think, viewpoint of what we have as caregiving, all the way to, you know, that parent or guardian caring for a child that's been born with significant healthcare challenges, and a spouse caring for, you know, a partner that's been diagnosed with cancer, the whole spectrum. So, yeah, we serve the 90 million family caregivers across the U.S., across all caregiving situations, and we provide support and resources to help them navigate their day today. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, in your role as Director of Community Initiatives, what does that entail?
It sounds fancy.
It does.
But I'm like, what does that actually mean?
It sounds fancy, but we are a small organization. So we are a group of under 10 folks serving 90 million folks.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't want to hear the math on that. you know, I am so fortunate that in my job, I get to work with folks like you. I get to talk to family caregivers and kind of bring them together for roundtables, really bring together a lot of patient advocacy and community organizations that work and serve family caregivers to make sure that we are really centering the voice of the family caregiver in everything that we do.
And one question that we like to ask all of our guests is if they've had personal experience with caregiving, and if you haven't, I'm sure you've heard tons of stories. If there's one that really resonates that will always stick with you.
Yeah. One of the things that we always talk about is I'm going to paraphrase a quote from former First Lady Rosalynn Carter that, you know, caregiving impacts all of us at some point in our life. And yes, I've been a family caregiver. I cared for my grandfather when he was diagnosed with bone cancer. I moved in with him. My grandmother had just recently passed from COPD. And so he was living on his own. He had hid his diagnosis from us so that we could care for our grandma. Mm-hmm. And then it had progressed. And so we just kind of did a round table with him and was like, all right, well, what do you want? What do you want us to do? How can we help you?
So you definitely had that experience. We're running into a break, but I want to hear the rest of this story after just a second. Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Nicole Goebel from the Caregiver Action Network, or CAN. You can learn more about CAN by going to caregiveraction.org. On the website, in the toolbox, there is a link to New Caregiver tab, which helps those that are new to caregiving or just beginning to identify as a family caregiver. And I say that because not all family caregivers identify as being a family caregiver. They just see it as a familial right. duty, something that, you know, you have to step up and do as a member of the family. But there are some risks, I would argue, to that. And so it's our goal to help caregivers identify that they are caregivers so that they can get the help and support that they need. And I found actually, Nicole, from your website that over 90% of family caregivers become more proactive about seeking resources and skills they need to assist their care recipient after they have self-identified. And 83% of self-identified family caregivers believe that their self-awareness led to increased confidence when talking to healthcare professionals about their loved one's care. And those statistics come from the National Family Caregiver Association survey of self-identified family caregivers back in 2001.
And so, Nicole, mm-hmm. it's wonderful that these are the kind of resources and efforts that you guys are making with your organization and then with the website. And I know that being part of a Caregiver Action Network means that you're going to be advocating on dozens of public policy issues that affect family caregivers
sure.
on both a federal and state level. And you just heard at the beginning of the show, we were talking with our governor and you were nodding as he was giving responses. And so I'm just curious about, can you tell us from your angle, what are some of the specific things that you all are currently advocating for?
Oh, sure. I mean, this really ties into a piece of our mission, which is creating respect for family caregivers, really making sure that their voice is heard, especially on a policy level. And one of the places I want to start in talking about this is the RAISE, National Caregiving Strategy, that was released last year. And it lists more than 300 actions that can be taken to support family caregivers.
Nicole, and I need to interrupt for a second because Liza became obsessed with that and was like quizzing me on those 300
on
steps and actions.
I've read RAISE, like,
yeah, cover
she
to cover. Read the whole RAISE yes. Act and then looked at me and said, aren't you going to do that? And I was like, I think I'll just take tips from you.
Yeah, we'll just wait for Nicole to explain it.
Yes.
So go ahead. But when you said RAISE, yeah. I had
she
to give
a little happy dance over
yes.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But this isn't a slumber party, so I'm not going to go through all 300.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
But what I do want to hit on is that I think that there are, a handful of suggestions that we really want to see enacted. And I think they all, are kind of these full encompassing things that we see really making an impact. And so the number one question that we hear from family caregivers is, how can I get paid to be a family caregiver? How can I get that financial support?
Great question.
Especially for folks that, are leaving their job to provide that care. So while it is true that some caregivers are able to enroll in programs to be paid, we would like to see an expansion of these programs. So that means encouraging Medicare programs offered by the VA and Medicare Advantage. Programs to expand community-based and long-term care options, including expanding self-directed opportunities that allow for hiring family caregivers. It's all part of that self-directed care. Being able to choose who is your caregiver.
Right.
At that point in time. And then
I think that emphasis is huge, right? That it's coming from the self-directed mm-hmm. piece. I just want to highlight a couple of the words that you use that can be kind of lingo. So self-directed, meaning that the person who's receiving the care can work on what yeah. they're looking for and what they want, and who are they going to trust the most with that, except a family caregiver. And then the other piece that you used, it was home and community-based. Can you go back to that term real quick for me, please?
Yeah, so home and community-based. You know, this is something personally that means a lot to me. I'm a person with a rare disease. And so having grown up with a disability, home and community-based means allowing me to be cared for at home, to live at home, to have the supports that I need at home and support my family, my mom, in providing that care. And really building those community strengths around that.
Love it. Yeah, and I just wanted to add in there, because that's such an excellent point that you made, and I'm sure that there are some fiscal conservatives out there that are cringing when you're saying, what do you mean you want to pay family members to take care of other family members? You know, who's going to pay for that? But I would argue, what the government would give a family caregiver to be able to sustain themselves and put food on the table is most mm-hmm. likely going to be much less than what you would pay, you know, a paid professional, or if that person sure. was to have to go into an institution, like we had spoke earlier with the governor. So although it sounds like it may be a big ask, I think the long term, there's actually financial benefits to doing that. But I'll let you continue. Sorry.
No, and that's such an excellent point. And it goes into kind of a second thing, which is what family caregivers pay out of pocket, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, estimated around $10,000 per year in just those expenses. And this could be money spent on everything from these over-the-counter medications, or, you know, having to pay for help in home, you know, if they need to leave and they need to have someone come in to provide any kind of care for their loved one, they're paying for that out of pocket, all of those things. So we would really like to see these expenses treated as medical expenses eligible for tax credits or medical deductions, because they really, really, really add up. And it makes the financial burden of caregiving just truly, truly, you know, just
mind-blowing. Too much, yeah, yeah. Overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then I think kind of the last piece is that, you know, sometimes family caregivers have to make that difficult choice to leave the workforce in order to provide care. And that's, you know, what I did for my grandfather. I was like, well, I guess, you know, I'll take a leave and do this. And, you know, when caregivers make that choice, they may not realize that it can negatively impact their retirement plans mm-hmm. because they no longer contribute to that Social Security. So we would like to see family caregivers who leave the workforce continue to accrue that Social Security credit to qualify for those benefits. And there's a lot of other things that all kind of bleed into other things, like, you know, making access to medications easier and more affordable. We want to see rules that would eliminate surprises that come with prior authorization requirements. So, for example, what I mean by that is, you know, medications that I need to take have to have certain authorizations so that I can go and it can be eligible for insurance and I can go to my pharmacy and not spend an entire paycheck picking that up. Now, these rules and regulations help make that easier. And of course, not only is this impacting the person, you know, because the person may be paying for those medications, but it's impacting the caregiver. Maybe the caregiver is paying for that medication. They're picking it up. They're doing all these things. it all becomes that burden for the family.
It's so true, Nicole. For my daughter, Nicole, as well, that she's on 8 different medications because she's got autism, epilepsy, and an intellectual disability. And I, at some point in time, will find the time to clock all the time that I spend chasing prior authorizations. And it's just mind-boggling because it seems like overkill, right? I mean, we definitely need some oversight of the medications, but as you're talking about, I would love to see some of these rules changed to make things a little bit more practical and realistic.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that ties beautifully into like why it's so important that states adopt the CARE Act, where you're recognizing family caregivers as that crucial part of that care team when folks are discharged from you know, the hospital or from a therapy setting, you know, after, you know, a stroke, whatever the case may be, recognizing them as part of that care team and needing to provide that really in-depth type of care to keep them at home.
Right. We are actually part.
There's so many different policies.
Sorry, Nicole. We are actually, I know there's a little bit of a delay with Zoom, but we are actually part of the conversation here in Wisconsin to get that CARE Act passed. We don't have it here.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that one of the alliances we're connected with is really working on, because it's a very tangible thing right here in this discharge plan. All we need to do is make sure that there is a piece where the family caregiver is getting addressed and taught and incorporated. And it's like part of the form, and all of the staff, all of the nurses are trained in it, because as the people that I'm talking with are pointing out, it's not that they don't want to care about the family caregiver. It's just not in their routine, right? But if we build it in, which is what the CARE Act is asking to do, right? Build it into the discharge process, then you get that perspective and that voice from the family caregiver.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wanted to switch gears just a minute. I would hate if we ran out of time with not addressing this. So I want to give the website once again for listeners, caregiveraction.org. You have so much information on your website. And Kristen, you had a question in regards to that.
Right. I loved it. I opened it up and I thought, wow, I wish I had this, you know, 15 years ago when I started my caregiving journey. Mm-hmm. But I also know that it can be a bit overwhelming, right? I thought, where am I going to find the time to navigate all of this great information? And so I'm wondering if you can give some direction for our audience in regards to when they go to this website, which we're going to ask them all to go to, because truly it is a godsend. When they go to caregiveraction.org, what do you think is the best way to navigate it?
Well, my first recommendation is just to go to the Family Caregiver Toolbox. One of the things that I love about our toolbox is that we have things categorized in some different ways, because we know that family caregivers are coming to that toolbox with kind of different approaches. They may see themselves as a new caregiver. They may see themselves as a working caregiver. They may see themselves as a long distance caregiver. They may be looking for information that is maybe based on, you know, I'm caring for a loved one with Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. So we have our toolbox categorized in a lot of different kind of things so that folks can easily find what speaks to them. And then they get a list of different resources that are kind of tuned to that. And they're able to pick on what speaks to them, what they need at that time. And the hope is that, you know, you bookmark it, you save it for later so that you're like, all right, I can go back to that. So that's one of the first places that I always recommend folks to go. And yeah, it can take a little bit of time to kind of, you know, go through everything. If you're like, all of this is really important and I want to go through everything. Another place where I always kind of send folks as well is our 10 tips. They're simple. They're quick. And the great thing about our 10 tips is that each of our 10 tips on our website links to resources that help folks implement that tip. So it's not just us saying, you know, oh, it would be great for you to do X. That's going to help you. We're like, also, here's a thing that can help you do that.
Well, I would Right. And I know we're coming up on break here. It always happens. It drives me crazy. But I encourage everyone to go to caregiveraction.org and check out the website. Thank you, Nicole, for all of the wonderful and much needed work that you do.
And sharing with us tonight.
Yes.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza Hellenbrand, and I'm here with my co-host Kristen Voss, and we just wrapped up speaking with Nicole Goebel from CAN and
Caregiver Action Network.
Like how that one wasn't too difficult.
Well, because we've had a lot of acronyms running around this last 24 hours.
Yeah, we have had acronym overload. Yeah. Which is a real thing. It's
it
a real
is.
Condition.
It is. Yes. Liza, what did you think about tonight's show? You were so excited.
I was so excited. You know, I am happy that Governor Evers took time out of his day to address this issue. I think it just goes to show that it is an issue near and dear to his heart. And, you know, it's just great to know that there's people out there fighting and working for us every day. And on the CAN front, I just love that website. I think there is really everything that you could need to know listed in there. And I didn't know about the advocacy work that they do. And then also what we didn't get to was the fact that they kind of spearhead the National Caregiver Month in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's how I found them originally.
Yes.
Right. So you get credit for bringing Governor Evers on.
Yeah.
And I get credit for getting Nicole on. Right.
There you go.
And it's because, and what I got out of the show is it was really nice to hear Governor Evers. Well, it was fun to run around all week and say, we've got, right, you know, an opportunity to talk to the governor. We scored this interview. But I think it was great to hear from him that he has some personal experience.
Right.
And he's really tapped into that this is a statewide bipartisan / nonpartisan issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And really, really thoughtful about how it's bubbling right now. And it's only going to get bigger. And so I do really appreciate the fact that he's got that high bar that we're going to have to expect these legislators to rise to. And so I really like that you brought that up with him.
Well, thank you. And I can and I like how they are addressing that. Well, I guess they have to, right, from the budget standpoint, kind of why we do this show, to bring awareness to the fact that we're not looking for a pity party. We're not looking for handouts. We're not looking for anyone to feel sorry for us. What we're looking to do is to educate people when they are caregivers so that they can, you know, self-identify and get the help and support that they need. And that this is a crisis. And if we don't address this on some level, the cards are going to fall, right?
I mean, right. It's a community issue.
Right.
Right. And so it is. It's investing. And what I loved when he made the quick aside, it's like childcare, right?
Right.
It's that if we don't invest in the people within our state, our economy is not going to be sustained, because what our economy is a social construct. And so that means it's people. That's
right.
All it is. And so if you don't have people working and you don't have people shopping, you don't got an economy. And I really appreciate that Governor Evers sees that, and hopefully the legislature will follow and recognize and the people that are talking to them. And they all keep telling us, share personal stories.
Right.
And I'm really blown away by that. I really feel like that means we have to do it, and we have to keep asking our listeners to do it.
We do. And there are a few more listening sessions that are coming up where you can do that. I should have the information in front of me, and I'll have to post it on our Facebook page, the Empowered Caregiver Community, where those remaining listening sessions are.
One is up in Minocqua, and I don't know if this... That's the last one. I don't remember if the third one is in the Dells or Eau Claire.
The Dells
already happened.
Yeah,
right?
The Dells I actually think was today, but you can still reach out via phone, via mail, show up at the Capitol, send an email, and let them know your caregiving story and why this is important to you and how you're impacted by your role as a caregiver.
Right, and they'll be tracking that, and they'll be able to then say, okay, we have to start addressing this in the budget.
Right, because if nobody shows up to tell the stories when they're just, you know, when they're deciding where are we going to spend money, well, nobody showed up to say we need money for this, so let's move on to the next thing.
To the many other things that have to be. I mean, we recognize that there's many other things that have to be funded in this state, but this is one that's near and dear to our hearts, and I feel like it truly is an investment. It's a long-term investment.
Exactly. It is an investment, and if we don't, it is going to cost us so much more at the end. It kind of brings me back to the autism days when autism was not covered by insurance, and so kids, young children, toddlers were going untreated, and you know, early intervention for autism is the key. You know, at least that's what I was told back in the day. And if you don't make gains with these children at a younger age, what is that going to look like when they're adults? You know, you can spend all the money now and get them off to be able to work, to live independently, to pay taxes on their own. Or, you know, you can have them sit for a few years on some wait list and then be paying for them forever.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it was a really exciting conversation tonight. It really met all of my expectations. And then I loved that we were able to end the evening with Nicole from the Caregiver Action Network and be able to share such a rich resource with our audience.
Yes. And I can't wait. Also, for next week's show, we are going to have Call for Culture, which is an organization that helps businesses, kind of change and shift to the new age workplace. You know, we got the Gen Zers and the millennials coming up, and they're wanting different things and thinking different things than us old folks, right? And so it really resonated with me because a lot of what Call for Culture is going out and doing really benefits that of the family caregiver.
Right.
You know, how do we create a work environment that supports the employees on different levels above and beyond just giving them the paycheck if they do what they're told, you know, they're supposed to do.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's going to be an excellent conversation. And I just want to end the evening by letting everybody know you can always find us at civicmedia.us. Mm-hmm. You can always find us on the Google Podcast, on the Apple Podcast, on Spotify, and on the Empowered Caregiver Community. And last but not least, we are still looking for nominations for fabulous caregivers. Hopefully we've got people inspired tonight by listening to us, and they'll reach out and give us some names of somebody who just needs a little bit of extra love through one of our caregiver gift boxes.
Yes, that's one of my favorite parts. When we have the opportunity to give out a caregiver gift box, we have some wonderful volunteers from the UW-Madison group girls that come and meet with us every week. And
shout out to them.
Yes, shout out to them. And they are super excited to work on putting these together and getting the gift boxes out there. So go to our website. There's a tab, nominate. Nominate a caregiver that you know that is going above and beyond and giving it their all.
Yep. We know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting, so that's why we want to end each show with the positive note. You got this. And together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver Community. And all these